You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 108. The last show was all about Mardi Gras past and present. My guest was Peggy Scott Laborde, executive producer at WYS, the New Orleans public television station. We recorded before a live audience at the King Cake Hub in New Orleans. It was a lot of fun, and Peggy had some great stories to tell and carnival insights to share. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Today's episode is about my reflections on the carnival season that just ended. I'll share why it was unique, what changes we might see in the future, and more. My hope is, whenever you listen to this, even if it's years from now, it'll provide some insight into how at least one local, me, thinks about this time of year. And it might help you with how you experience Mardi Gras and carnival. And for the rest of the podcast, I'm just going to use those two terms pretty much interchangeably. As you can tell, I still have the Mardi Gras crud. I'm recording this on Ash Wednesday, the day after Mardi Gras in 2020, so we'll do the best we can. But before we jump in, I want to tell you about two of our sponsors that make Beyond Bourbon Street possible. First up is Two Chicks Walking Tours. I love the tours offered by Two Chicks, but as much as the tours themselves, I appreciate the way my friend Christine Miller has built her business. Christine loves and cares about her customers, her employees, her coworkers, and the city of New Orleans. In addition to being longtime sponsors of the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast, the crew over at Two Chicks has earned attention in numerous international publications, including Glamour, Marie Claire, Harper's Bazaar, the Sunday Times Travel Magazine, and U.S. News & World Report, among others. Two Chicks' small group tours include the ever-popular Garden District Tour, their signature tours such as Dead Sexy and Brothels, Bordellos, and Ladies of the Night, and their classic French Quarter and St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 tours. They also offer private tours that can be customized just for your group. Two Chicks employs guides that are published to authors, local artists, and really engaged New Orleanians. Our Facebook community overwhelmingly supports including them on your itinerary. Whatever you choose, know you're going to be in great hands and you'll have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. Man, I really got the Barry White voice for those of you that are of my generation, but we'll endure and keep going. Next up, I want to mention Liz Wood Realty. The most frequent questions Marie and I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you, it can be overwhelming. But not when you work with Liz. She and her team makes the process fun and easy. They'll help you figure out if uptown, downtown, the Ninth Ward, mid-city, the Treme, which one's right for you. Reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. A bunch of members of our community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. The other thing that sets Liz apart is what she does after she helps you find a place. Liz does a great job at building community and helping you get connected with the people in your new area. I've seen it time and again where people that work with Liz, they become friends, she organizes events, she helps connect people. And so between our Beyond Bourbon Street community and Liz and what she does to help you, you'll be good to go when you're ready to make New Orleans your home. When that's so, reach out to Liz over at LizWoodRealty.com. All right, let's jump into the discussion. Hopefully my voice holds up. I got about 10 or 12 things, maybe a little bit more, just reflections on this carnival season. It was unique in many ways, and in many ways it was traditional, and I just thought it'd be a good time to step back and reflect on it while it's fresh. And my idea is that it'll help you if you came to New Orleans and experienced carnival this year, you'll be able to think back and compare your memories to mine. And if you've always wanted to come to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, but you weren't sure, I think we'll give you a good list of things to think about and just to understand what it's like. So first off, number one is just my overall reflections. It was a good Mardi Gras despite the tragedies, and we had several tragedies. We had two people one in two different parades, one each in two different parades, that were run over by floats and were tragically killed. That had not happened since 2008 when a rider was getting off of a float and he was run over. But this was the first time since 1981 that a spectator had been run over by a float and killed. Two riders in the same parade, different floats, the crew of Toth, just Sunday last, fell off. They both fell off their floats and they survived, but they were rushed to the hospital. And the backdrop of this is that we have the route had to be partially rerouted because of the Hard Rock Hotel collapse last year, where there are still two bodies in the rubble and the remains of that structure. So how can I say that it was still good? There was almost no violence on the routes. There were huge crowds, especially the first weekend. So let me back up just a bit. Carnival begins on Twelfth Night in January, January 6th, right? And we're going to get to that a little bit. But it runs through midnight on Mardi Gras, which was yesterday. Today's Ash Wednesday. The official parade season starts 12 days before Mardi Gras. So basically, you got two weekends, and then it runs through the Tuesday. And that first weekend traditionally was not as crowded. But this year, the first weekend and the second weekend were crowded. I think a lot of that had to do with weather. But there were just huge crowds. There was a lot of costumes, a lot of purple, green, and gold out. And, you know, again, I don't want to make light because two people lost their lives. Two New Orleanians, both of whom happened to be 58 years old. One man and one woman, separate parades. And they were tragic accidents, but both of them were out doing something that they had probably done for decades. They were out with their families, they were enjoying a good time, and it ended tragically. But I think that even with that, it was just a festive season. And again, that sounds terrible to say that in light of that. But even with that, we had mostly good weather. The Thursday night parades, which include Muses, which is a huge organization, all-female organization, had to be rescheduled because of strong winds. But for the most part, we really didn't have many weather problems. And my takeaway is that there's going to have to be some changes, which we'll talk about in a minute, to address some of the issues that came up. But overall, it was a really good season. It was a festive season. Lots of changes, but lots of crowds and lots of community. So that brings me to the second thing, is safety. I think ultimately, safety on the route is a personal issue. The advice that New Orleanians give to each other and that I would give to you is that you got to take care of yourself, your family, and the people around you, whether you know them or not. It's easy for things to happen. I think that in this case, the two people that died that were watching the floats, right? What happens is in both cases, they were very close to moving vehicles, to these floats. And it's easy to get sucked in. And anybody that's lived here for any length of time has probably done it. You walk up, you recognize someone, or someone wants to give you a prize throw, and you get very, very close to the float, and you can lose sight of the fact that these are big, big, heavy vehicles. They wobble, they're moving, they're pulled by a tractor. That tractor driver can't see very far back. And you know, sometimes I think both of those accidents happened at nighttime. It's easy for that to happen. Undoubtedly, the city's gonna work on it, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I think fundamentally, it's important to take care of yourself and to know your surroundings and to be on the lookout for other people. The other thing is you got loose beads on the ground, so it's easy to slip. If it's been raining or if you're on the neutral ground, it might be a little muddy. A lot of people have been drinking. So, you know, it's just a lot to think about. But the thing that astounded me, I mentioned Toth and two riders fell off individually. That parade came on the heels of these other two parades where people were killed. Toth came 12 hours after the second death at Endymion. And even after that, I was out with my family on a Sunday morning watching Toth, and I watched people behaving poorly in a way I just couldn't believe. There was a man standing next to me that was probably my dad's age, so about 70 years old, and he went running out behind a float to grab what was a deck of cards, basically, and he fell and landed in between two floats, hit his head on the ground, had to be pulled up. And I'm thinking, you are not a kid, and two people have lost their lives doing something similar. What in the heck are you doing? And the people around him, what are you doing not stopping him from doing this? At the same time, on the same corner, I witnessed a very young child, probably, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, darting in and out between floats and chasing things, and at one point almost reaching underneath a float to get something. And I look up, and I don't see any parents doing anything. So I pulled the kid back, and I just think that it's so important to be aware of your surroundings, to teach the kids. And if somebody's kid isn't paying attention, or if it doesn't seem like somebody's paying attention to their kids, I think it's all our responsibility. I'd rather have a parent upset with me than see a kid get rolled over by a float. But it's the adult I couldn't believe. I mean, again, this guy's like probably 70 years old. And I just kept thinking, what are you doing? In fact, I had one of our girls right with me, and she said, what is he doing? So, I think, having said that, the crews, the carnival organizations, and the city will certainly work to improve. But I got to tell you, right after the second death, the mayor and the chief of police came out and said, no more tandem floats. And these are floats that are joined together by a trailer hitch and pulled by one tractor. I might get criticized for this, but I don't care. This is my thought. I don't think you make those kind of decisions on the spur of the moment. It caused lots of ripple effects, and the crews that were left had no choice but to comply. But all of a sudden, you got to get tractor drivers who are exhausted. You got to find tractors. In some cases, those multi-stage floats are powered by one generator on the back. So if you separate them, now you got to figure that out. I just think that in Carnival, it's not wise to make important personal decisions or big decisions of any kind because everybody's tired and there's a lot going on. You immediately heard people talking about, and certainly people not from here maybe haven't experienced it, well, they should put barricades all along the route. And they do have barricades at some of the turns and some of the really busy areas. But I don't think barricades are the solution, because if you do that and something happens and people start to panic and run and there's only one way out, that's going to be a problem. It's also a problem, those barricades, when emergency personnel need to get in. I vaguely recall, and I might have this wrong, but I don't think so. Sometime when I was a kid or maybe a teenager along St. Charles Avenue, I think they had tried something with like post and rope, but that's a problem too. People are going to stumble over it. I really don't think tandems are the problem. I think that they can improve several things. This year, they made a push to pick up. People go out and stake out spots early, and we'll talk about that in a minute. They did a good job, the city did, of trying to crack down on that at least a little bit. I think that is relatively easy in some regards. I think public service announcements should help. I think that you could have a security person walking along with the floats. Also, the longtime listeners have heard me talk about parade ladders. Basically, a parade ladder is a 6-foot ladder, usually wooden or aluminum, and you build about a 3-foot wooden box, rectangular box that's open on the top and the front, and you put a dowel through the front, and the kids sit in it, and an adult stands on the back. I know it sounds crazy, but it's a way of life here. It's really pretty safe. It's really pretty steady when you have a kid, when you have an adult on the back. But the rule or the law is, those should be 6 feet back from the street. And people are from the curb. And the idea is, if it would fall over, get knocked over, that it doesn't end up in the street and get run over by a float, right? Well, we have an easy solution here. The main route is on St. Charles Avenue. And on the neutral ground, there are two sets of streetcar tracks. So there's 4 rails. It would be very easy to say all chairs and all ladders have to be behind the rail that is closest to the street. That's probably 8 or 10 feet. I have been a ladder dad until this year, meaning bring the ladder out, put the kids in it. Our kids have finally outgrown it. But we routinely set up inside that set of streetcar tracks, and it's perfect. The city wouldn't have to measure. It's just right there. And the other thing that's become kind of epidemic is this idea of like bag chairs, the fold-up chairs. People put them right up in front of the ladders or right up against the street, and then people can't walk. They can't move freely in and out, and so you kind of get trapped. So I think public service announcements, the security person walking next to the floats, Maybe they could come up with an accordion-style thing around the tandems. I'm not sure that that's really the issue, but ultimately there'll be a group of people that'll help decide that and moving the ladders and chairs back. So safety is my number two thing this year. It was definitely on the thoughts of everyone by the end of the carnival season, and it's something I expect is going to get addressed. Number three, there's been a talk the last couple of years about environmentally friendly Mardi Gras. And one of the problems is that so many of the beads and the plastics end up in our storm drains. And they don't, you know, they're not biodegradable, and they end up just swept up into the storm drains or into trash. And so there's been talk of it, but this is the first year where I felt like we're really starting to hit a tipping point. Lots of organizations were pushing what they called reusable throws. And again, the Crew of Muses leads the way. They like to call them remusable throws, get it? And they throw things that hopefully people will keep. So my daughter's got, this was the 20th year of Muses, and so they threw little packets that you could collect pins representing each of the 20 years. They throw things like lunch bags and cocktail napkins and little packets. They threw a really, I have twin girls, they threw these scrunchies with kind of these little tails on them that were cute. And so they try to throw things other than traditional foreign-made beads, but things that people are going to keep and use. This year, the Crew of Rex on Mardi Gras, instead of throwing plastic cups, which we all have hundreds if not thousands of here in New Orleans, they threw these metal cups that they hope will become collectibles. Zulu was the original with that. The Crew of Zulu parades before Rex on Mardi Gras, and their prize throw is a coconut. So they drain the milk out of them, and they paint them sometimes very elaborately and put glitter on them. And I would say that's like the original, not only like prize throw or prize catch, but also environmentally friendly, right? Because it's a coconut, so it's biodegradable, it's organic. But now you have Nyx, the Crew of Nyx, also a female-only organization. They do purses. The Crew of Iris does glasses or sunglasses. The Crew of Tux, which is pretty irreverent but a lot of fun, throws plungers. Really hard to describe. And I won't get this up in the show notes immediately, but eventually I'll publish. One of the moderators of our Facebook group, Andrew Eaton, is also a member of the Crew of Tux and rides, I think, on the brothel's float. And he made a plunger that's customized with a little Beyond Bourbon Street logo. It all sounds silly, and it is silly, but it's a lot of fun. And the idea is to try to make things that people are going to keep and that aren't going to end up in the street. Another thing towards the environmentally friendly Mardi Gras that happened this year is the city came out with a regulation or an ordinance that said riders can't throw plastic bags off the float. So what happens is you buy these packs of beads and throws, and there's all these little plastic bags, and so you end up ripping them open and for the most part just tossing it off the side of the float, knowing that the sanitation folks are going to come by right after the parade and pick it all up. The problem, of course, is some of that ends up in the drains and it's not biodegradable. So this year, really right before Carnival, the city announced that you couldn't do that. So you had to dispose of it or collect it on the float itself, which is harder than it sounds because it's really crowded on the float and overloaded when you have riders and all of their throws. You can't just walk up and down. You're sort of anchored in place. Plus, you have a harness, which also gets back to the riders falling off. I'm not sure how that happened, if they were properly harnessed in. But nonetheless, you could see there was a whole lot less debris coming off the floats. And so I think that when that ordinance or regulation came out, I was sort of skeptical, but it definitely made a difference. The other thing that's happening is that for the last 2 years, the sanitation department has put little blocks in front of the storm drains to allow water in but to keep the debris out. There's been a real emphasis on recycling beads. So there's a great organization called ARC of New Orleans that collects beads, and then they have people with special needs work there and help sort out the beads, and then you can buy them if you're going to ride in the parade. A lot more emphasis this year on recycling. So I saw bins set up all over the place, sometimes in front of people's houses, if you wanted to drop off recycling or your beads after the parade. And I think all of those things make sense. There's a couple companies trying to bring to market biodegradable throws, and it looks like a couple of them are getting really close to making affordable throws to make it a part of it. I know some of the organizations have, the carnival organizations have challenged themselves to like hit a certain percentage of either reusable or biodegradable or environmentally friendly throws. So that was the third big thing that jumped out at me this year at Mardi Gras. It was the first time that you could really feel it and see the difference there. I got to drink a little bit of water to try to get through this. The fourth one, again, I've talked about this a little bit, is women in carnival. I think this is the biggest change post-Katrina, along with walking crews. Before Katrina, there were not very many women-only carnival organizations. In fact, right before Katrina, there was Iris, which was the largest all-female crew, and there was one called Pandora, and I think there were one or two others. And Pandora had, I don't remember if it was right before Katrina, had basically stopped. Well, they've come back. But Muses and Nyx, well, they both ran into problems this year. Muses with the weather, it was really windy, they had to postpone it. And Nyx was one of the two parades where a pedestrian was killed. They have both led the way and have influenced other organizations. And Mardi Gras is better because they exist. And what I mean by that is Muses, when they came about, they really exploded. And then Nyx did the same. And so you had these two big, big organizations that were all female. And I think it renewed interest, and it made Iris, which is over 100 years old, I think a better parade, because all of a sudden you had women wanting to ride in these different parades, or maybe they couldn't get into one and they would get into another, or they liked it and then they decided to get into multiple parades and they told their friends about it. And now you have Pandora has come back, you have these, you have, I just think it's made Mardi Gras, it's made it more diverse, but it's also just made it better. And they really lead the way. I mean, these organizations are some of the biggest in carnival now. The other thing that was significant that I really didn't hear talked about too much is that this is the first carnival in New Orleans ever where we've had a woman as mayor. And while I don't agree with Mayor Cantrell on many issues, I do agree with her on a lot of other things, it's still a big deal. It's the first time. The city's been in existence for 301 years. Mardi Gras was created as we know it today with the parades in the 1850s. And it's the first time we've ever had a woman mayor, a woman serving as mayor during carnival season. So I just, you can feel the imprint. Again, it's all these specialty throws. And again, I'll talk about, in fact, I'm going to move on now and talk about number five because my voice is fading, are the walking crews. So these have become such a big part of the scene to Mardi Gras, and it's opened Mardi Gras and Carnival to so many more people. And so walking crews come in all varieties. It used to be there were a couple men's organizations that they would carry these like canes with paper flowers, and they would have a band, and they would walk down the street and basically give the women a paper flower in exchange for a kiss on the cheek. But after Katrina, and I want to say Muses really brought this in, all these like sub crews and these little organizations. So you have a group like called the Muffaladas, and so they're like a all female dancing group. You have the Elvi, probably 60 to 100 men, I think all men dressed as Elvis, walking down the street and riding down the street. You have a crew, I forget what it's called, but basically they have motorized Lazy Boy recliners, and they ride down the street in the parade in their Lazy Boys, you know, and they have, some of them have a table built in with their drinks, and they are smoking cigars and they're throwing things. The Elvi were giving out shirts and capes. So one of my daughters got a cape. So that was pretty neat. There are all manner of walking crews. There is the Dames de Perlage, which I'm hoping to do an episode with them. They have embrace the Mardi Gras Indian tradition of hand sewing and beading these bodices. And each year they pick a theme. And this year it was about fierce women. It's really, really neat. And let's see, there's the Pussyfooters. So Christine Miller, the owner of Two Chicks Walking Tours, is a Pussyfooter. So they're a marching group as well. there must be dozens, if not 100, of these different organizations. And the Dead Beans and the Red Beans, two different organizations that both parade on Lundi Gras the day before Mardi Gras. And what it's done is it's provided an opportunity for everyone at all price levels, genders, race, any demographic you want to come up with. There's now an opportunity for you to participate. One of the things that I asked our moderators of our Facebook group for input on their reflections, and Lisa Chimola said, you know, this is her first year. She rode in a parade in Morpheus, and she actively walked in and participated as a member of the Muffaladas. And she said, it's such a different perspective being inside the parade, inside the barricades, inside the route, as opposed to watching. And both are fabulous, but it was interesting for her to get that experience and get it both on a float as well as part of a marching organization. And that really wasn't available to most people until, again, certainly after Katrina or right around Katrina. And it's opened up Carnival. It's given people an opportunity. Maybe you can't afford to, or you don't want to ride on a float, but you find a walking group that just speaks to you. Our good friends Chris and Jennifer are in one of the Red Bean organizations, and they're going to fuss at me for not remembering which one it is. But it's a way that they've been New Orleanians for just a couple of years, and they've been able to find their niche and and participate. And I think that was something that you really saw this year, or really just jumped out at me, is what a difference the walking crews have made in terms of enriching Carnival and making it even that much more layered. Excuse me, I'm trying to get as much water down as I can. Let's see, number six on my list is the early season. So again, longtime listeners know that Carnival begins on January 6th, which is Twelfth Night, and it goes until midnight on Mardi Gras. Traditionally, there were two parades on the evening of January 6th. There were the Funny 40 Fellows, which is a streetcar parade, and there was the crew of Joan of Arc to celebrate Joan of Arc, which... there's a big statue of Joan of Arc that was given to New Orleans by the French government many, many years ago. It's downtown in the French Quarter. And so for years, those were the only two parades. And then there might have been one or two parades between then and the start of parade season, which I'll talk about in a moment. This year, they added a third parade right after Funny 40 Fellows that was also on a streetcar. But more and more parades popped up in what I'll call the pre-parade season. So the way it works is Carnival starts on Twelfth Night, but then 12 days prior to Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, is the official start of parade season. So essentially, that's two Fridays before Mardi Gras. And that's when parades, as we here in New Orleans traditionally think about parades, pop up. But for many years, there were one or two parades in the pre-parade season, if you will. But now there's so many. There is the very raunchy but satirical and funny Crew de Vue. So while Mardi Gras is very family friendly, the Crew de Vue is not family friendly. It's in the French Quarter and the Marigny, I think. You can tell I don't go because I have twin 8-year-olds as I record this in 2020. There's a brilliant parade called T-Rex. And in this case, T means little in Cajun French. And so the idea is, in New Orleans, you grow up going to school here, you make what are called shoebox floats. So it's sort of like a little diorama. You take a shoebox and you make it into a float and you decorate it. And you usually have a little parade at school and you'll carry them around or maybe put them in a wagon. But T-Rex is a parade where people make shoebox floats or a little bit bigger, but not much. And then they pull them, so they put them on wheels and they pull them around. And it is an amazingly intricate, fun, detailed parade. So everything's in miniature. People come out and they make like miniature dioramas of people in mini parade ladders behind mini barricades, like, you know, with Ken and Barbie dolls and that kind of thing. It's a brilliant parade. There's a parade called Barkus, which is, as the name implies, it's a dog parade. There is a parade called the Crew of Chewbacca's, which is for Star Wars lovers. And so there are plenty of these parades that have now popped up that are kind of outside of the official parade season. They're generally made up of sub-crews or sub-organizations, so you might band together with 10 to 50 people and form your own organization. You pay very, very minimal entry fees, and you become a part of that, the bigger crew who has paid to get the permit to parade, right? And also, a lot of these are in the French Quarter or the Marigny or the Bywater, in places that we don't have a lot of parades anymore. So that's been a really interesting thing, the early season. If there's a downside to it, it has made it such that the season of going out and celebrating Carnival and Mardi Gras has gotten progressively longer. And it's already an exercise in pacing. And it's gotten really hard to do that as we get more and more from January 6th through Mardi Gras. There's something, not every night, but almost every weekend, and certainly, and then you get the 12 days of parade season, and that has gotten more and more full with better and better parades and more parades, and so it just, it's fun, but this is exactly how you end up sounding like I sound right now. I wouldn't change it, but it's really great. It's been just an interesting thing. I'm going to take a break real quick and pay the bills and talk about the old number 77 hotel before we move on. Again, if you're a longtime listener, you heard me talk about the old 77. But when you're ready to make your plans to visit New Orleans, you're going to need a place to stay. And I love many things about this hotel, but one of them is that it's situated in the Warehouse District, which is just 3 blocks from the French Quarter. It also features a variety of pet-friendly rooms and the award-winning Compère Lapin restaurant. The old number 77 is in a building that dates to the 1850s. Back then, French was still a common language on the streets of New Orleans, and in 1857 is when the crew of Comus formed the first Mardi Gras parade in New Orleans. So that building was probably still a coffee warehouse in 1857 when the crew of Comus made its inaugural procession in New Orleans. Like back then, it's still in a great location in the Warehouse District, but it's also along the parade route, so many of the parades pass right in front of the old 77. In fact, if you follow them on social media, you will have seen, or you will see, some great images of the parades passing right in front. And here's a little insider tip. That area in the Warehouse District, for the parades that pass by there, they're on their way to the convention center nearby, and there's not a lot of crowds. And the riders are unloading as many of the throws as they can. They'll save some for when they go into the convention center. But the ones that don't go in, or the ones that finish right there, the riders are anxious to get rid of stuff. So it's a perfect combination of a great place to stay and a great place to watch the parades. It isn't too crowded, and you're almost sure to catch a lot of things. I also like that the Old 77 has a great rotating art exhibit that's free. It's put together by a local organization called Wear Your Art. And it's especially fitting since the area where the hotel is now sometimes called the Art District. They have 167 rooms, so it's small, it feels cozy, but you still got lots of choices. They got interior rooms in case you don't want any hint of daylight after a night of parades or just partying. They also have premium rooms, and they have artist loft suites that are curated by New Orleans artists. The Old 77 is located at 535 Chapatula Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a little bit of lagniappe, something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tootla for coffee and pastries in the morning. All right, let's get back to my list. And the reason I jumped to the commercial or the ad is because number 7 is a reflection that's like not my favorite. And so number 7 is hashtag Chads, C-H-A-D-S. So in New Orleans, a Chad is somebody that goes out way early, sometimes weeks before, or certainly days before, and tries to stake out a spot, claim a spot on public land, so they have a great place to see the parades. Chads kind of also generally refers to the people that put up ladders stacked next to each other and chairs stacked next to each other and tents and all kinds of things. So they're out on public ground, usually on the neutral ground. And the problem then is it's hard for people to get in there. It's hard for people that show up to freely access this land. That's not any one person's. It's the city's, right? It's owned by all of us. And when you start stacking all these ladders and chairs and you put the tents and tables and all this stuff, it's fun if you're a part of it, but it makes it nearly impossible for people to freely access the parade and move back and forth. And it feels like it reached a head this year. It's just getting worse and worse. The city did this year. There was a rule that you could kind of stake out a spot 24 hours early. And this year they changed it to 4 hours. And they did, I think, a decent job enforcing it. It wasn't perfect, but they picked up a lot of stuff and took it away. Some people came right back. But I think this is a real issue because Mardi Gras is free and it should be accessible to people. I'm not saying, look, we go out early sometimes. It's nice to have a good spot. But you don't need to be blocking up right against the curb. You don't need to be taking up a ton of room. You know, it needs to be accessible for everybody. Number 8 on my list is routes. So when I was growing up, there were neighborhood parades. There were probably, 7 or 10 different routes that a parade might take. And post-Katrina, the routes were consolidated. So there are parades out in Metairie, which is a nearby suburb of New Orleans, for those of you that aren't here in the city. But basically in the city, with the exception of Endymion, which is a super crew on the Saturday before Mardi Gras, there's essentially one route with one little variation. And that variation is great. A lot of parades go down Magazine Street, which is a very family-friendly part of the parade route. But what's happened with just essentially two routes, maybe three, depending on how you count, is that more and more parades are going back to back to back, and there are fewer routes, so people are congregating on the routes that there are. It makes it fun because you can see 3, 4. In fact, Friday night there were 5 parades in a row, over 200 floats in a row, but it's made it really crowded, and it makes it hard to park and hard to get around, and again, you got more and more people coming. It's just made it difficult. At the same time, part of the reason for that is an infrastructure issue. Post-Katrina, the New Orleans Police Department and New Orleans Fire Department, there just aren't enough personnel available to manage multiple routes. And so it's a catch-22. I think when there are more routes, it disperses the crowd. It probably makes some things easier for the police, the fire department, the emergency personnel, but at the same time, they get stretched thin. There's only so many people. And I think this is starting to really hit an issue, you know, and I see both sides of it. I wish we had neighborhood parades again because it was a lot of fun. At the same time, we're really good friends with a lot of firemen, a lot of policemen, and I understand that concern. I expect the city's going to try to figure this out long term because I think it kind of gets back to the safety thing. The more people you put on fewer routes, obviously, the more crowded it is. You know, and on the one hand, it's done to try to make it easier to respond to emergencies. And on the other hand, maybe it's helping cause some of those issues. So, you know, I think it's a mixed thing. But it was certainly something that you could feel and see this year. The crowds were just enormous. In fact, Mardi Gras Day was fairly light. And I think in part it was because we had such good weather for most of Mardi Gras. And because of the one night that we didn't, and they took 2 parades off of the Thursday, one of which was Muses, it really consolidated. And so again, on that Friday night, you have 5 parades. And that made it really attractive for people. Plus, on both Fridays and Saturdays of the official parade season, we had really nice weather. The 2 Saturdays were tens, like 60 degrees, 65 degrees and sunny, exactly what you would like to spend a day out. And that gets to, I've kind of lost count. I'm going to call this number 9, families and costumes. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you've heard me talk about it. I call it Beyond Bourbon Street because I got aggravated one year seeing the narrative on national television of Mardi Gras being boobs and beads on Bourbon Street. And there certainly is that, and there certainly is a sort of raunchy side, but that is not most of Mardi Gras. Most of Mardi Gras are families having a great time. And it really jumped out at me this year. The families out on the routes, there were costumes. You know, people dress up on Mardi Gras Day. But this year was the first time, maybe last year a little bit, there were lots of people, adults and kids, out in costumes throughout the parade season. And there was lots of purple, green, and gold. There are some great t-shirts in the city, great t-shirt companies in the city. I wear a lot of things by the NOLA T-Shirt Club of the Month. That's not a paid ad. I just really like Jackie and John over there. But there are several Flirty Girl, Dirty Coast, They're just great shirts. Perlis is a sort of an old traditional place with the purple, green, and gold shirts. And so you saw a lot of that on the route, and you saw a lot of costumes, not only Mardi Gras Day, but throughout the season. And that just like warms my heart, because as a dad and as a husband, Mardi Gras is so much about family to me, family and friends. And for us, we spent a lot of time on the parade routes this year with family. My sister, who also has twins, brought her kids in town for the first time for Mardi Gras, so they got to experience it. We ran into a lot of people, spent a lot of time with friends on the parade route, and there were just so many people in costume. It was just, it was really great. We didn't spend any time at Mardi Gras down in the French Quarter, but many friends did, and there were lots of pictures of families and not families dressed in costumes. And so it's just such a part of Mardi Gras, but it really jumped out at me. And maybe it had something to do with we really had great weather. And even on Mardi Gras, it was overcast. It was a little bit cool. But in the past couple of years, we've had really, really cold weather and or rain or both. And sometimes that dampens the costumes. On the flip side, when it's really hot, people don't tend to keep the costumes on too long because a lot of the costumes aren't that breathable. You know, you got wigs and stuff like that. And this year just seemed to be like a perfect combination. So that was terrific. And thank you for sticking with me with the voice. It's a deep voice I always wished I had, right? But normally I sound like I'm going through puberty as a 50-year-old. Anyway, I digress. Let's see. I don't even know anymore if I called that number 9 or 10. We'll say that was 9. Number 10 were King Cakes and the King Cake Hub run by my friend Will Samuels. Will Samuel, if you listen to the last episode, episode 107 with Peggy Scott Laborde, we recorded it before a live audience, which was a blast. And we did it at the King Cake Hub. So the King Cake Hub is a brilliant idea by my friend Will, where they basically, it's a hub, it's exactly what it sounds like. You can go and buy king cakes from about 15 or 18 different bakeries or 15 or 18 different varieties of king cake at one stop. And so what that means is you can go to one stop and try all kinds of places. So this year, my favorite king cake, well, two, I guess, but my favorite king cake of the season was by a bakery called High Dough, H-I-D-O, and it's on the West Bank, which is across the river from the main part of New Orleans. And what that means is I would have never stumbled against across High Dough, but they make a terrific king cake. And thanks to the King Cake Hub, I got to try it. And I think along with that, there are more varieties of king cake now than there ever were. Before Katrina, there was essentially a couple. There was, I'm going to slaughter the pronunciation, but there was the Galette de Foix, which was the traditional French king cake, which is sort of a pastry with an almond filling. And then there was the, what we call McKinsey's King Cake. McKinsey's was a bakery that made sort of a brioche, but it was fairly dry and it had the sprinkles, the multicolored sugar on top. But now, gosh, I don't know, there's probably 60 different King Cakes in the city, maybe more. And they just get, more varieties every year. Again, the High Dough is a very traditional King Cake, but a better version of the McKinsey's King Cake. The other one that I really liked this year was from a place in the Bywater downriver from the French Quarter called Bratz Y'all is the name of the place. And they made a pretzel king cake. So think of a soft pretzel, so more of like a pastry pretzel. So without salt, they slice it open and they put like a Bavarian cream cheese in it. I think it has a lemon flavor a little bit. And what was interesting, so it's delicious. It's also small enough that our family of four, two adults and two kids, could polish it off in an afternoon, whether we should or not. But, you know, we did. The other thing that was interesting about it is we were eating it, and one of the kids said, well, there's no baby. So king cakes have a baby, a plastic baby usually. And the idea is whoever gets the baby in their piece of the king cake has to buy the next king cake or host the next party. Well, there was no baby. And the other child said, yeah, there were. There were chocolate chips in it. And so they put a couple of chocolate chips in the king cake, and that served as the quote-unquote baby. And I thought, man, that's a really clever idea. It kind of goes back to there's a tradition there of putting something edible in the king cake, but also it is environmentally friendly, right? So it's chocolate chips. It also makes it really easy to cheat if you don't want to confess to having the baby, right? But put that aside for a minute. It's a really good, it's a non-traditional king cake. So purists will say, no, it's not a king cake. It was absolutely delicious. So there's a plug there for Brats, y'all. Next year, if they do that king cake, you should check it out. That wasn't available at the King Cake Hub, but there were so many different ones. And I just think the combination of all these varieties of bakeries coming up with creative and traditional approaches to king cake, as well as the King Cake Hub, those two things combined to me really, again, have made Mardi Gras Carnival even better. This was a fairly long carnival season. It went about 7 weeks, so there was plenty of time for different king cakes. And whether you went to the King Cake Hub or you just explored the city, going in search of a great piece of king cake is a really great way to explore the city. The other thing there is I saw more and more bakeries this year offering king cake by the slice, sometimes at their own bakery, sometimes at local coffee shops. And that's a great idea because particularly if you're visiting or if you're single or whatever, I'll eat a whole king cake over a period of days. But if you don't want to do that, or if you're not in town for that long, being able to get a slice of king cake is a really great thing. So king cakes really are one of the things that, as I think about the 2020 season, that I'll remember, the variety and the options there. A couple more things. I'm starting to lose my voice. Lisa, I mentioned her earlier, one of our moderators. She said that it was nice to be in the parade, dancing and riding. She also said that, and this is really, really an astute observation, Mardi Gras is a time that you have to accept it's hard to meet up with people. You might have bad cell reception, and it's not personal, but the people you want to see, you maybe don't get to see, and the people you weren't expecting to see, you run into, and that's awesome. Lisa says, the best part's been just spending time with people, even when the parades are canceled. And I liken that idea that Lisa shares to, if you live somewhere different than where your family lives and you travel for the holidays, you know, and you go home and you want to see everybody and you want to see your high school friends and your mama and your aunt and all that stuff, it's really hard, right? And you're trying to meet up and everybody's got different expectations about what you should do. And that's similar to Mardi Gras. People that have been here a long time have traditions. They go to the same spot. We see people that we only see at Mardi Gras, and the only way we connect with them is because we show up at the same spot every year. And when I was a kid, we were at a different spot. It was called Dick's Bar. It's now the Avenue Pub, owned by Polly Watts. I think Dick was her dad, and so it's now called the Avenue Pub. But we used to go on the neutral ground right across from there when I was a kid, and we did that for 20 years. And so everybody's got their own tradition, and what that means is you say, oh, I'd love to see you, but your tradition's different than mine, and maybe you're a couple miles away. And that's a lot in Mardi Gras, where you can't necessarily get around easily by car and all that stuff. So it's a wonderful time. It is sometimes a hard time a year to try to connect with people because everybody's got their traditions. And as Lisa mentions, it seems like every year they set up more and more temporary cell towers and it still can't keep up with the demand, right? Everybody's got a smartphone. Everybody's taking videos and trying to text and all that stuff. What it means is you kind of just go back to simplicity, right? You say, look, I'll probably be on the corner of this and that. And one of my favorite things is just walking down St. Charles Avenue before the parades. And you just see who you see. You know, there's kids out throwing footballs with their parents. There's people, there's the vendors selling cotton candy and Snap Pops and all that stuff. People are barbecuing, people eating Popeye's fried chicken, drinking a beer, maybe a glass of wine. And you just walk down the street and you run into so many people. On Mardi Gras Day, on Fat Tuesday, we had plans. We went to the place we normally go, and we ran into Nola Maven. You might know Nola Maven. Susan is on Instagram and Twitter as Nola Maven, but she's a dear friend and somebody we just randomly ran into. She was walking down the street, and she saw us, and she ended up spending the afternoon with us, and it was great. She also rides in Muses, so she's been very generous to our kids over the years with shoes and throws, and even showed the kids how to decorate the shoes, but We didn't expect to see her, and we did. My friend David Moore, also on social media, we ran into him. We ran into, again, two of our moderators of the Facebook group, Andrew and Jennifer Eaton and their kids. And you just run into people, you know? And so it can be really frustrating if you try to make these plans and they're absolute and I'm going to meet you here at this time. But if you can just let go of that and just wander. We had such a good time, again, with my sister and her kids, Addie and Mia. If you're listening to this, I love you, my nieces. And with our own kids and with friends and just running into people. It was such a good time. It just felt, in the midst of the tragedy and the problems and the backdrop of the Hard Rock Hotel, it just also seemed like a really good year connecting with people. And I don't know if that's because we just spent more time out in the streets. And I just think it's so foundational to New Orleans. Mardi Gras is so central to who we are as a culture. And it highlights the good, the bad, the challenges. You know, New Orleans is a city that's complicated with a lot of layers and a lot of dysfunction and a lot of love and a lot of goodness. And it all comes together at Mardi Gras. And that might sound corny, but if you've been here for Carnival, for Mardi Gras, then you know what I'm talking about. And I think, for me, finally, the last thing, and I have long since lost count how many this is, so I'm going to call it 12. For me, seeing Mardi Gras through the eyes of the community that we've built with this podcast, there are people that are in New Orleans, there are people that are from New Orleans, there's people that celebrate all over the country. So I'm going to put in a little plug. If you are not a member, if you're on Facebook and you're not a member of our free Facebook group, you need to join it. It's the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E. And it is just basically a community of people sharing their love of New Orleans. And one of the best things for me this year has been to go in that group and see people from all over the country who aren't here making their own king cakes from scratch or hosting their own Mardi Gras parties or listening to WWOZ broadcast Mardi Gras music in the days leading up to Mardi Gras and just showing us how they want to be connected and how they are connected with New Orleans. And then getting to see the pictures and the videos of people that are here in town, whether they're visiting or they're New Orleanians, new or old. It's just an amazing thing. And we started this podcast 4+ years ago. I don't know what I was thinking, but I definitely wasn't thinking about the community that we've been able to create. And seeing that group of people and seeing Mardi Gras through their eyes and through your eyes has really just been amazing for me. I mean, I'm 49 years old. I think I've missed 2 Mardi Gras in my 49 years. And just to get to see it through so many people's eyes and the various ways. Some people spend the day in the French Quarter. Some people spend the day in the Marigny. Some people are uptown like we are. Some people are downtown by Zulu. There's just some people are chasing the Skull and Bones gang, which we'll have to do a whole other episode on. Some people are looking for Mardi Gras Indians. There's just so many ways to experience Mardi Gras and Carnival. And for me, what the podcast and the community has done is allowed me to see it in thousands more ways, through thousands more pairs of eyes than just my own. And that has truly been what maybe has made Mardi Gras 2020 so great for me. Plus, again, I have 8-year-old little girls. You know, a couple more years, they're not going to want to be with mom and dad on Mardi Gras morning. They're going to want to be out with their friends, but they're not there now. They still, they love being out there with us. They love celebrating every catch. They like the experience. They like trying to see how much cotton candy we'll buy for them. It's just, gosh, I don't know. I hope you can hear it even with the raspiness in my voice. It's just such a fun time to celebrate the best of New Orleans. So those are a few of my recollections. I appreciate so much you joining me today for this look back at Mardi Gras and Carnival 2020. I also really want to thank Andrew and Jennifer Eaton, Lisa Chimola, and my wife Marie. Together, they moderate our Beyond Bourbon Street crew over on Facebook, and I was able to incorporate a lot of their thoughts in today's episode. If you were here, I hope today helped you relive the season, and if you weren't, I hope it encourages you to plan a trip. I think everybody ought to see and experience Mardi Gras, and that goes for whether you have kids, you don't have kids, you're married, you're single, whatever. I think it's got to be on everybody's list. Please come join us one of these days.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.